with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi and welcome to the 88th episode of Robots. My name is Jana, and today we will be bringing you an audio tour of the International Conference on Intelligent Robots and Systems, IROS for short. This event was held last week in San Francisco and brought together some of the leading researchers and organizations in the field. But before we visit IROS, let's hear the latest news in robotics with Christine.
Thank you. Researchers at Osaka University have created omnidirectional tracks. The mechanism is based on an omni ball, which consists of a sphere cut in half. The two halves are mounted on a common axis, allowing them to rotate separately. This passive axis is then connected to a perpendicular axis that leads out of the sphere and is turned by a motor. Turning the motor will simply rotate the sphere. However, by connecting three or more omni balls to a platform, the platform can move in any direction. And by encasing two balls with specially made tracks that allow the rotational axis to pass, a tracked robot can move in any direction without changing its orientation. Apart from using the new mechanism for robot tracks, the researchers are also investigating its use for robot grippers and are planning to extend the work to build an omnidirectional platform. For more information on this omnidirectional robot, have a look at www.robotspodcast.com.
Celebrating 50 years of robotics, the IROS conference was held over 4 days in San Francisco, California, just last week. Our reporters were there, and they're about to give you an audio tour of some of the most interesting projects presented at the conference.
Hi, Simon. Great to be here. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Hi. Well, I'm employed at Intuitive Surgical. We develop a product called the Da Vinci Surgical System. I work in the research and development group at the company, so I'm involved in some of the early stage product development.
This is the Da Vinci that we see
this
here?
This is the Da Vinci. It's basically a system for robot assisting minimally invasive surgery. I'm not sure if you're familiar with laparoscopic surgery, but
maybe you can tell us.
It's essentially keyhole surgery. So the idea is that you use long and slender instruments to perform surgery inside of the body without making a large incision. And so the benefits of this for the patient are less pain, less blood loss, fewer complications potentially. But the trade-off is it's much more difficult for the surgeon to do complex procedures by essentially operating using chopsticks through small holes in the body.
So
the idea is that you have instruments and you have a camera. So you insert the camera in through a small hole into the patient's body. So for example, through the belly button or the umbilicus. And then you have instruments going through additional ports, say in the abdomen. And then you're basically operating through these small holes. And so what the robot does is rather than having the surgeon having to stand over the patient and manipulate these chopsticks, the robot does that, and it provides the surgeon the ability to control much more precisely the instrument. So the surgeon sits in a surgical console, which has a three-dimensional display, a stereo display, and two joysticks. And so they manipulate, using these joysticks, the instruments that are inside the patient's body. So you're basically transposing the surgeon's vision and their dexterous capability inside of the patient. And so the whole idea is that you want to get the preciseness and the control and the capability of an open surgery, but without the large incision, through the small, minimally invasive approach.
Here, how many arms do you have?
So there are four arms on the robot. One of them specifically holds the camera, or we call it an endoscope. It's a stereo endoscope, so it has two cameras in it, one for the surgeon's right eye and one for the surgeon's left eye, so they get to see depth perception, they see real 3D. And then the other three arms are for surgical instruments. And the instruments have wrists on them, so the surgeon can manipulate tools inside of the body just like they do in real life in an open surgery with their own wrists. And these instruments, there are many different kinds. There are probably 50 different instruments for different kinds of procedures. And they can be exchanged and swapped during the procedure. So if a surgeon needs a scissor, they can pull out an instrument, put the scissor in. If they need a laser, we have a laser instrument for cutting, or a grasper, or a suction irrigation instrument. All of these different instruments plug and play onto the same three arms.
And I see some sort of clay. What are people doing here?
So what they're doing is they're practicing on a training tool. The training tool is made out of a rubber, compliant rubber material, and they're using it to interact and learn how to use the robot to do delicate interactions with structures that mimic tissue. And next to it, you see a suture. You see a suture with a thread on it. And so what they would use that for would be to learn how to suture tissue together and how to tie knots and how to use the instruments. It's like learning how to use kind of arm extenders or how to walk on stilts in a way. It's a natural thing that you're used to doing in terms of interacting with the world, but you're doing it through a tool. And so this is what we call a phantom, a plastic phantom or a synthetic tissue model that's used to teach people without having to train on real patients.
Can they do it without training?
Can they do it without training? No, there's a training process. Most of our users are already experienced surgeons, so they know how to do the procedure. But just as with any new tool, they need to get some training and learn how to use it effectively.
I saw some people doing a good job, actually.
Oh, yeah,
they're
doing a pretty good job. And these engineers, many of them have haptics backgrounds in robotics, so they play lots of games and they know how to use these kinds of
things. So there's a feedback? There's a haptic feedback?
There's a little bit of haptic feedback that mainly tells them when the arms are colliding with each other or colliding with the patient. They don't feel directly feedback from this tissue surface, and then mainly that's because of the difficulties of putting a sensor on the end of an instrument that's ultimately disposable. So there are all sorts of stability and accuracy and cost issues around force sensing, but that's a whole other topic. And then on the right here, you see also a simulator. So we have a simulator product, which is a virtual reality kind of simulator, which is used to train surgeons in a virtual environment. So they get to learn how to do control the camera, how to perform suturing, how to use energy instruments for cauterizing blood vessels, things like that that are difficult to train on plastic phantoms or where you wouldn't want to train on your first patient.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Simon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So we're going to listen to the Darwin OP from Robotics Co.
Start motion then. Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Darwin. I'm open architecture humanoid platform for research, education, and outreach activities. I would like to help researchers and students interested in robotics, network, image processing, and automatic control system. Wow! Yes, go. Sit down. Stand up. Clap, please. Oops. Bye-bye.
Casey, can you present yourself to our listeners?
Hello. I'm a CEO of SimLab from Seoul, Korea.
What do we see at this booth?
We are a software company, robotics software company. We have a dynamic simulation with a robotics framework with a real-time robotics. It'll run the simulation. At the same time, it'll run in real robots. Also, we have another product line coming out with the hardware, which is funded by Korean government. And we brought the quadruped here, and we're demoing software and hardware combination.
Can you describe what this quadruped looks like for our listeners?
Quadruped is four legs with 3 degrees of freedom each joint. And it looks like a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it acts like a dog.
Mm-hmm. What can it do?
It can actually walk and turn.
Okay, all right. And more on the simulation side, are you looking at specific robots?
We are supporting lots of robots in this exhibit right now. And we're working with the Mecca, Bararams, and we're working with all the universities. And we actually simulate the real robots, not imaginary robots. But of course, because of software, you can create your own robot and test it. So fast prototyping is one of the main force of our software you can do.
And can people do something at this booth?
Yes, they can. They can play with kinetics, and you can throw boxes and with the dynamic simulation, and then you can actually work out with the boxes.
Okay, thank you, Casey.
You're welcome. Bye.
Hi, Samuel. Can you present yourself to our listeners?
Hi, Sabine. Yes, I am the president of Robotique. So it's a spin-off from a university lab in Canada. And what we do is an industrial-grade robotic gripper. So it's a hand that can pick many different objects, but that is simple to control and that can be installed in factories and also used in research.
Is that what we see at this booth?
Yeah, so it's a three-finger hand. That is, so the articulated hands, it's always better seeing a video or seeing pictures. So describe it in audio. We can control it at the booth using the X-Pad controller, so we can show how you would interface it with the robot using simple open and close high-level command.
What kind of manipulation can you get with this?
The type of research projects are either mobile manipulation or telemanipulation, or even people working on tactile sensors, so people are integrating their sensors on our gripper. And it's used also on the manufacturing side, when people have to handle a lot of different parts with their industrial robots.
Is there any way to interact with this robot here?
Here, yeah, you can play with the Xbox controller if you want. So I'll give you the control.
Mm-hmm.
So you just open this way, close this way, and you can change the orientation of the fingers with the three buttons here.
Aha, okay, so now it's closing, it's opening. Okay, now I can bring them closer.
Yeah. So if you close it, you see that the fingers will adapt by themselves.
Okay, so now I'm closing, is that right?
Chose this one.
Okay, and then I pull it
like this.
Now I'm closing it.
Yep.
Okay, and they wrap around the remote control that you just put in the hand.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Well, thanks, Samuel.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Hi, Andy. We're at the National Instruments booth. Can you present yourself to our listeners?
Sure. So my name is Andy, and I manage our academic efforts for controls and robotics. And today we are at IROS presenting NI's technology to use in robotics applications. So the first thing that we're showing here is a Darwin OP platform made by Robotis. Now what we've done is that we've used LabVIEW as a graphical user programming language to provide a high-level programming environment so the user could very quickly be able to see the different signals from the Darwin. Like we're showing here, there's a two-axis gyroscopes on the system so the user could see in real time what the system is doing. And we also create front panel controls to allow the users very interactively be able to control different actuators on the robot. And over here, what we're showing is a research platform from UC San Diego using National Instruments Single Board Rio. So the Single Board Rio has a real-time processor and an FPGA all on the same board. What they've done is they've designed a search and rescue robot with a camera, with different motors and actuators to allow a different maneuvers to go into rough terrains and terrains that a human cannot go into. Again, they use the same technology of LabVIEW to be able to implement textual and graphical code, very rapidly being able to deploy to the real-time processing to allow algorithm determinism. And at the same time, they also implemented wireless technologies. They could do kind of coordinated sort of fashion and maneuver as well. And lastly, what we're showing, again, is using the Single Board Rio. We have a robotic starter kit that uses the same technology as Single Board Rio for teaching, for undergraduate teaching, and also for research. The Robotic Starter Kit essentially is a out-of-the-box platform to provide a very nice experience for the students. We have in LabVIEW a very easy startup wizard to set up the hardware, the motor, and also calibrate the IR sensors that would allow you to essentially have a fully autonomous robotic system up and running within 10 minutes.
Okay. What's National Instruments' interest in robotics?
So National Instruments' interest in robotics is essentially using LabVIEW as a programming language, using graphical system designs approach, and also incorporating our LabVIEW Rio technology. Rio stands for reconfigurable I/O. So platforms such as Compact Rio and Single Board Rio, where it has a real-time processor and FPGA, where students will be able to design their algorithm from desktop and deploy it to the real-time processor, and using the same methodology to be able to program the FPGA without having to develop their own VHDL code.
Thanks, Andy.
Yep, not a problem.
Hi, Julian. You're from Adept Mobile Robots. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, nice to meet you. So we come to IROS every year. We've been doing so for 10 years. We love the show. It's great to meet our customers. This year, we're showcasing a couple new research platforms. We have an underwater platform called Aqua 2.
Can you describe what it looks like? It's kind of cool.
So I tell people it looks a little bit like a platypus. It's got six independent flippers that help it navigate through the water. It's got cameras in the front and back to help it sense its environment. And it's a research platform for academics who want to investigate coral reefs, beachfronts, do environmental monitoring. We're hoping that people want to investigate using it as a dive assistant as well, for applications where divers might want some sort of computing capacity.
Okay, and the bigger one here, what is that?
The bigger one, this is our Seeker Junior outdoor robot, and we've paired it with an Ocean Engineering Terabot arm. Both of them are rated for heavy rain. They're IP54. The arm can lift very heavy weight and is very rugged. So we expect people to use this. Oh, I apologize. The gripper's missing.
Now, I'm just wondering what the sensor is above where the gripper is.
So this is a camera. So okay. You'll be able to see what you're manipulating. Mm-hmm. You can teleoperate the unit. This will have applications for researchers investigating disaster relief, outdoor manipulation.
So there's the gripper holding a huge hammer, actually.
What?
It's a bit to show the weight that can be carried by the gripper, I guess.
Yeah, and this particular gripper can lift between 10 and 20 kilograms, which is a large amount for a mobile manipulator.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I still see, what is that, flying robots?
Yeah. So we partnered with a company called Prioria that produces this airplane. It's called a Maverick. It's got a folding carbon fiber wing, so the whole unit can fold up and fit inside.
Oh, that's awesome. So it's like
a 6-inch tube.
It's a carbon skeleton, and in between you have flexible material so that
Absolutely.
It can bend.
So it's very much, it looks very much like a bird.
Mm-hmm.
And we're selling this again to researchers as a platform for them to install sensors or cameras or new communications technology.
And the final one, I think I've seen this quite a few times.
Yeah, we expect so. We sell our Pioneer platforms all over the world. We've mm-hmm. been selling these for 15 years, and it's always fun to come to these shows and talk to researchers and find out what they've done with our mobile robotic platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always coming up with new innovative applications.
The Pioneers are very present in the research
They're very popular
mm-hmm.
there.
Is this a laser?
This is a laser rangefinder.
Mm-hmm.
When we put that on our robots, it's able to not navigate autonomously. It'll avoid people. It'll avoid other robots. It won't get lost inside your office space or laboratory.
And the last one, is that a smaller version of the Pioneer?
This is our AmigoBot. So we sell this to high schools or universities, largely for educational or classroom applications. It's got sonar, so it's able to navigate as well. And it's just a little robust kind of educational tool to teach programming and robotic applications.
So you have a wide range of different robots. You have water, air,
land,
grounds,
sea, and air.
And the different sizes.
This year, yeah, we're very proud to be in the ground and on the water and the air.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Julian.
It was nice meeting you.
Hi, Roberto. Can you present yourself?
Yes. I am Robert. I am the CEO of Robotnik. And we are here at IROS. And we are presenting two different products. One is we have developed a mobile platform, which is the version of the Guardian, but this is an integrated approach that includes the one arm with the Guardian mobile platform. And the second thing we are presenting here is the Summit robot. This is a small mobile robot. It's for research, and this is a platform developed for working outdoor and for doing any research application outdoors.
What kind of sensors does it have?
The Summit and also the Guardian, they have encoders, of course, for the dead reckoning. They have a gyro, they have a camera, and a pan-tilt zoom camera. They have also standard, you can put the Hokuyo laser ranger. and you can add them. They are open source robots with either player states or ROS operating system, and you can plug to them all the standard components that you can plug to this architectures. I mean, inertial measurement units, different type of cameras, any type of DGPS, RTK, DGPS, whatever. Yeah.
So the one we see driving around with the four wheels, which one is that?
This is the Summit.
That's the Summit robot. Okay. Yeah. So it's really meant for rugged terrain, or?
Yeah, it's intended for outdoor. It's a type of crawler, which is for working in rocky terrains. And it's able to climb very high slopes, more than 45 degrees. And okay, this pretended to work outdoors, but also pretended to work it at high speeds. Not only it's to work up to 3 meters per second.
So thank you, Roberto.
You're welcome.
Hi, Nick. Can you present yourself to our listeners?
Yes, my name's Nick Singer. I'm a director of the Shadow Robot Company, London, England. And we have here, as a static display, one of our shadow robot hands that is fitted with a SynTouch sensitive device for touch sensing. These are very new, these SynTouch sensors, and we were so impressed with them that we decided to offer them as an alternative to our current touch sensing add-ons that we can have on our own robotic hand. They are virtually a three sensor in one package. They can measure pressure and also temperature and also the surface texture of a surface that the finger is moving across. So it will be very useful in certain applications to have a sensor on the end of one of our hands that can, for instance, search among debris, and if it finds a human being, it can touch them and tell whether they are still alive or not, whether they're warm, you know, and then we are also looking at providing systems with our hands that can replace human beings in difficult or dangerous or unpleasant situations. And so we hope that we can provide our clients with a good, reliable device to do that.
That's beautiful. What we see here in the booth is this hand covered with this new type of sensor, right?
That's right, yeah.
Can we interact with it in any way?
Well, we can. We can try one out, but unfortunately they all seem to be busy at the moment.
They do, yeah. It seems like a very popular booth.
It is an extremely good sensor, and both ourselves and Barrett Technology have also decided to offer this sensor as an alternative to their own design on their hands as well.
And the fact that it's better than the old sensor is because you have these three functionalities.
That's
in one.
Right. Yes, it's you. It, you have a multiplicity of possible measurements that you can make using the one tactile sensor.
Well, excellent. Thank you, Nick.
Okay. Nice to meet you. Bye-bye.
Hi, Christopher. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Hi. Well, my name is Christopher, and I'm from the head office at Trunk in Germany. And we're here on our booth with a few exhibits we have. We used to have something we call modular robots, and we're able to make arms, mobile platforms, things like that, based on our modules.
Can you tell us what we see at this booth?
We have two arms moving in different configurations. We have different kinds of grippers. We have robotic hands with three fingers. We have linear modules. We have rotary modules. Anything for service robots.
What do you want people to take out of this booth?
I would like to show the modularity of our robots, so we actually can make the kinematics suitable for the task, and also that they're fairly lightweight, they're mobile, they run on 24 volt DC, and they're just ideal for any mobile robot application.
You had your hand on the robot while it was moving. I was a bit worried, but no, I guess
okay.
You're not.
I'm not worried, no. There's a technology we're still currently developing, actually, to make safe human-robot interaction, but it's definitely something that's on our agenda.
And compliance.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you, Christopher.
You're welcome.
Hi, Heiner. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Yes, hello. My name is Rainer Bischoff from KUKA Laboratories. It's a new company which we founded in the beginning of this year. And this is actually the first exhibition that we are participating in as this new company. And that's why we brought all our nice products.
Can you tell us more about what we see?
Yes, sure.
Exhibit?
So what you're seeing here is a lightweight robot, the KUKA U-Bot, and the KUKA Omnirob. So the lightweight robot has been around for quite some time. And at this exhibition, we are showing it as the Jedi bot. This,
what does it look like?
The lightweight robot is a 7-degree of freedom arm, torque controlled. And what Stanford University did, they just added a sword to it, like a Jedi, so that it can actually attack and defend itself when it's being approached by another Jedi warrior. So this is a very interesting exhibit, which drew a lot of attention to the booth. And it was actually based on core technologies that we developed for this lightweight robot, like the fast research interface, which enables students and researchers to connect to the lightweight robot functionality in a 1 millisecond cycle time. And it's also easy to use, so the student project only took 3 weeks to complete. And then I think if you go to YouTube and download the video on the Jedi bot, it has reached immediate attention to 270,000 downloads or so. So one of the most successful videos on YouTube which displays a KUKA robot.
Why is it lightweight?
It's lightweight because it weighs only 14 kilograms, but it can still carry 7 kilograms. This is what we have as a rated payload. And I think it is very, very interesting for researchers to use this torque-controlled robot. And for us, it's important that researchers get use of this because we think that it's also important for the factory of the future, where we want to have these kind of lightweight robots, for instance, for assembly tasks and for as a co-worker, as a helper of the production.
And what else do we see? I see lots of robots.
Yeah, we have lots of robots here. So we have a small version of a mobile manipulator and a larger version of a mobile manipulator. So the smaller version here is the KUKA U-Bot. It's a 5-degree of freedom robot arm with a 2-finger gripper on top of an omnidirectional mobile platform. Its dimensions are about 60 times 40 centimeters. And we are offering this product particularly for research and education. And we give this into the market as a kind of reference platform for mobile manipulation. And it is completely open. This means whatever you have as open source hardware, software can be installed on this robot system. Because from KUKA we just have the just the hardware delivered. And what we intend to do with our scaled up version, the KUKA Omnirob, it's also a 4-degree of it's also omnidirectional platform, and on top of it we have the KUKA lightweight robot, as explained before. But we are aiming at whatever the researchers are doing on our KUKA U-Bot should also run on the larger version, the KUKA Omnirob.
Okay, so generalizable. It's omnidirectional because it can move all around the STEM.
Omnidirectional means this refers to the mobile platform, which can move instantaneously. It can rotate on spot, but it can also move... It can basically superpose translational and rotational motions at the same time. So you could generate like a dancing robot, or you can achieve a robot which goes sideways and then in next instance it can move forward or backward. And this is very important, this maneuverability on the shop floor.
What I see is the lightweight robot over there is on a mobile platform. It can actually move around and pick up things and deposit them on a little track.
Yes.
Is that something that's...
This
the
is
future
something
is combining mobile robots to actual manipulators? So.
Yes, we definitely see this as the future of the factory, of manufacturing. And what all the displays that you see here have a relationship to a funded research project that we are engaged in. So the KUKA Omnirob system with the lightweight robot that you see over there with the small load carriers, placing them on ramps and placing them in nests and picking them up from somewhere. This comes from a research project called TAPAS, which stands for Transformable Automation Systems. And we very much hope that these kind of robots will actually transform the way today automation is handled in a hard automated way towards more flexibility. So our robots should increase the flexibility of the manufacturing company and
of course, also improves the quality of the products that they are producing.
Okay, thank you. That was very impressive.
Thank you.
Hi, Beth. Tell us a bit more about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm the president of Butterfly Haptics, and it's a spin-off from my husband's research lab at Carnegie Mellon, and it's an exciting product because it's the only magnetically levitated haptic interface device. So there's quite a few other haptic devices out, but they're they're mechanical, and ours is all dynamic. And it's fun showing people. We always say that touching is believing. So
what can people do at this booth?
Well, we have our demonstration of our product where they can sit down and feel how sensitive the sense of touch is with the different graphics, and we have demonstrations of showing the 6 degrees of freedom and the sensitivity to textures and many of the applications that we're interested in. So,
can you describe a bit what the haptic sensor looks like?
Well, it's a round disc in a table, and it's a sphere with super powerful magnets inside, but it's not dangerous to people. And then we have a display and a couple computers running the product. And then we have lots of pretty butterfly pictures and designs around because we figured people will remember butterflies. So.
Yeah, I was wondering where the butterfly came from.
Well, and also it's a very nice, soft, gentle picture of the device when the floater, the handle is floating. It's like a butterfly landing. So
very true. Okay, thank you, Beth.
Thank you.
So I'm here with Jan from BioRob. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Yes, I'm from the University of Darmstadt, and we did the spin-off to further develop this lightweight robot we developed with the university together. The idea is to have a cable-driven arm, which is quite similar to the human arm. So you
like
have tendons and muscles. You have like the muscles are more the motors, and in order to make the upper arm very lightweight, to put all the heavy stuff like the motors back on the basis, and with cables every single joint is driven. And when you look at the human arm, it's not very stiff, it's very compliant. So what we did, we did put springs into the cables, so in case of a collision, if you have a very soft system, you have very low inertia, so it doesn't hurt you at all. So you can throw away all the safety systems like cages or light barriers, and you can use it right next to the human worker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there it's moving very fast. It could be a bit impressive. I mean, you could be worried if it wasn't compliant. Can you actually like put your arm there and stop it?
Yeah, you can just put your arm in the way of the robot, and then it will stop. It will detect
so
the collision,
there. Mm-hmm.
And then after a few seconds, he slowly starts his movement again.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, due to this low weight, you have very low inertia.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are like playing ping pong with it because it can move very fast if you need it. But still, you can stay very close to it, so it doesn't hurt you.
Okay, all right, excellent. But can you explain what it looks like, maybe for people who can't see it?
Actually, we have a very small, elegant. I don't know how to.
I think it's elegant. Yeah.
Elegant upper arm, which is underneath a small black cover. Everything lightweight, so we used some fabric instead of a hard case.
Mm-hmm.
And in the back, you have like a white basis with all the motors in there. And so this part is not moving a lot, so this can be quite heavy. The whole system is only about like 5 kilograms. You could just.
Oh, okay.
Take your hand, lift it up, and put it upside down on the wall, the ceiling, whatever you want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it can still lift 2 kilograms. So it's a powerful system for research and for industrial applications.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Jan.
You're welcome.
Hi, Jan. You're from Bosch Research. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Hi, I'm Jan. I'm a senior manager at Bosch Research in Palo Alto, responsible for the Autonomous Technologies Group. And one of our projects is working with Zulu Garage and the Pier 2. We are part of the Pier 2 beta program, where we develop applications for the Pier 2 and publish them as open source under ROS.org.
What do we see in this booth today?
Here we are showing a peer 2, doing one of the many demo applications that we've developed. You can order a drink through a web interface, and then the peer 2 goes to the refrigerator, opens the door, gets a soda can out, and gives it to you or puts it for you on the table.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's excellent. I didn't notice. So you can choose Coke,
yeah.
And so it has to recognize mm-hmm. the can in the fridge, or does it know where it is?
It actually knows where it is in the fridge,
okay.
But then it has to find the specific position mm-hmm. of the can in the fridge,
mm-hmm.
and it also has to, since it's not at the exact same position every time, find the door relative to its own position,
mm-hmm.
find the door handle, open the door, then drive towards the inside of the refrigerator, pushing the door to open it a little more,
mm-hmm.
then finding the can, getting the can,
just opening a
getting
fridge
the can
easy.
Out, and then closing the fridge again, and then it drives to the table and puts the can on the table.
Is Bosch Research interested in service robotics?
So generally we explore future applications for all kinds of Bosch businesses, and robotics is a business area in which we are very interested in the long run. So we are working on future applications.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Jan.
Thank you.
I'm here with Dirk from Festo. Can you tell us a bit more about what you do?
Okay. Yeah, I come from Germany, from the headquarters of Festo Didactic, from the didactic part of the Festo company. And what we show here is a research study consisting of our standard Robotino mobile robotics platform, which we use to integrate the small version of our bionic handling assistant. That is an air-driven robotic arm with a fin gripper and effector, and we use this research study to develop an autonomous control for this bionic handling assistant, and we are here at the IROS to find contacts to universities with which we are able to cooperate in making research for this autonomous control.
Can you describe what it looks like?
It looks a little bit like an elephant trunk. Yeah, the large brother is 1 meter and a little bit more long. Yeah, and this one here is just 30, 40 centimeters. It depends on the air pressure that we have in the different chambers here. And yeah, we are able to use it for a lot of different tasks. The professional one could be used as an assembly assistant here in industrial assembly, or also as a nurse assistant. And yeah, right now we are at the beginning of making it a professional product. And as I've mentioned before, we will use this IROS to get in contact with the different universities and institutes.
Okay, yeah, I'm really excited to see it because we did an episode actually just on this whole system and the gripper. I think you won a very big prize in Germany, right, for this?
Yeah, right. That mm-hmm. was the Deutsche Zukunftspreis. Mm-hmm. And that was last year. And a few weeks ago, our Bundespräsident visited Festo, and we have shown him also this small version of the...
So this is a small version?
Yeah, this is the
small version. Because I imagined it bigger, so okay, I understand.
Yeah, the bigger one is really huge and has more chambers for pressing air into, yeah. And so from our point of view, this is really a success here at the IROS, because we got a lot of contacts right now from Asia, Europe and the US, of course. And so we think we will come back next year with a solution for our problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our challenges.
Can I try the fin gripper? If I press, will
yeah,
it wrap?
Yeah, of course.
So, oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right, the fin gripper is pinching my finger now.
You can take more fingers.
Uh-huh. Let me try. All right, all four?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it adapts.
Like
so it squeezes my hand, but it adapts around it.
Make it like this, another
right.
form.
A different
shape. And then you will
shape.
See it will follow the form of the object.
All right, so it's very good at adapting to squeeze my hand.
When you take
we have a golf ball.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. All right, well, thank you, Dirk, very much.
You're welcome.
At the Aldebaran stand. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Oh, thank you very much, yeah. Aldebaran, you know, is the name of a giant star. Because the stars is the future, is a dream, is some poetry inside that. It's the same with robotics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Bruno Maisonnier, founder and CEO of Aldebaran Robotics, the creator of this robot now. Here you have two of these robots. They are interactive robots. The most important things to me is to have robots helping people in the future. And if we want to have robots helping people, we need to have robots accepted by people. And the first criterion of acceptance is the look, the design, the interaction. And the most important is no more, even if it's very important, to have some algorithm of gait, walking, or whatever, is to have people seeing this robot and say, wow, it's so cute, it's so nice, and willing to interact. So you have to have the communication code between people and robots and so on and so forth. So those robots are here as interactive robots, able to communicate, to have a body language, to understand what you are saying to them and so on and so forth.
I think most people know the now, but can you still explain what it looks like for someone who's listening to the podcast?
It's a small humanoid robot, 60 centimeter tall, with eyes, hands, able to move, to understand, to detect faces, to recognize faces of people pre-registered inside the robot, and able to understand some orders and some voice recognition, and to speak, of course, and to sing and to dance and all these kind of things.
Yeah, last year it told us a story, a Jedi story.
Exactly,
exactly. So you told us that a lot of people at this conference are actually using this as a research platform and are publishing papers on this. So what's your feedback from the community?
The feedback, it's a powerful platform, very open, and it's a robust one. And this is very important, because if you don't want to have robots as jewels somewhere in that you can use only once every quarter, you won't be able to perform research. If you want the PhD, the students, to perform research on real robots, you need to have cheap robots, affordable one, but a robust one at the same time. It can fall down hundreds and thousands of times without breaking. So this is the kind of things that, the kind of feedback that we are getting from our customers. And because it's open and because it's interactive one, they can perform some kind of research. They cannot perform on other robots. For instance, we have medical labs working on with autistic kids. And they are using this robot because the robot is able to interact with autistic kids that cannot interact with you and me. So some kind of link between the parents and the children. So we are opening a new field, and it's possible thanks to the shape of interactive robot of this now.
It's very friendly.
Yes, absolutely. And this robot, as you can see, is a current one, and we are releasing a new version of the robot next month, in 1 month's time, that will improve many, many features inside, helping developing more sophisticated algorithm and interactive possibilities.
Can we have a little idea of what this new version will be like?
It will look like the same, with maybe some different colors, but just with Atom inside, with higher level cameras, more accurate cameras, new motors, torque limiters, this kind of thing, a new voice recognition system to improve interactivity between people and robots through the voice.
Thank you, Bruno.
I thank you for your interest.
Hi, Grant, you're from Hokuyu Automatic. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Well, I'm actually with the North American distributor for Hokuyu Automatic. What we have here is, the laser rangefinders, very popular on the mobile robots. 2D, we've got 30 meter ranges up, down to 5 meter ranges.
How big is it? Can you describe to our listeners what it looks like?
It's about 4 inches tall, weighs about 370 grams.
Mm-hmm. And if I put myself in front of it, so basically what the screen is showing is that I'm blocking the way,
it's going to give you a distance reading.
Yeah.
And as well as the 270 degree angle, so there's given distance readings on everybody within that scanning angle.
I see a lot of other lasers, so what's the difference? Is it the size?
Other laser scanners are relatively small, low power consumption. The simple URG, URG04LX, UG01, is very competitive in the mobile robotics, not only because of the size, price point as well. So,
can you give us some indication of the price?
It's a low-cost version of the laser scanner.
Okay.
So.
All right. Thank you, Grant.
Yep.
So I'm here with Olivier from Webots. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so I started actually the company 13 years ago as a spin-off from EPFL. And today we have over 850 customers worldwide, mostly universities that are using WebBots for research but also education. And over the past few years, we've been selling quite a number of licenses to industry as well.
Can you tell us what we see at the booth here today?
Oh yeah, sure. So here you can see a video of a number of simulations in WebBots. So actually in this video, there are quite a large number of simulation models. Most of them have been contributed by our users, but some of them were designed by ourselves. So it provides a good overview of the capabilities of WebBots. And well, it's catch the eye of the people coming
see
around.
See the robots right now, there's a robot basically crawling around there. There's a robot going over some earth or extraterrestrial type of earth.
Yeah,
so
it tries to cover all the possibilities of WebBots. So you've got flying robots, helicopter, swimming robot, the salamander robot from EPFL, a legged robot. So you've got the Nao that you can see here as well. You've got the Darwin Ope that you can see here. There's also the Kuka U-Bot, which is modeled in WebBots, and that you can see here as well. So a lot of very familiar robots, plus a number of research platform that correspond to lab prototypes, so that people can see that they can either reuse existing robots or create their own custom model in WebBots.
Okay, thank you, Olivier.
You're welcome.
Hi, Adam. You're here from Willow Garage. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
So I'm an intern at Willow Garage. I'm also a PhD student at Stanford University. And at Willow, I have been working on tools for interactive manipulation. The idea is that a human operator could interface with the robot remotely, so the robot could be in another location, and the human would be able to help the robot accomplish a manipulation task.
Is that what we see here?
So what we see here is a computer interface. The human can see both the view from the robot's cameras and also a 3D virtual rendering of the robot and the environment that it sees. And as an example, one tool that we have lets you position a gripper virtually and then get it in a good pose where it would grasp something. And then once you tell it okay, the robot will then execute that grasp while avoiding obstacles automatically.
You have a large variety of objects here. Is there? Do people just contribute random objects?
So this is part of our collection of, I guess, what we call grasping toys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to represent sort of common household bottles and cans and other things that you might find either in a kitchen or in a bathroom.
Can we try?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm here testing the Willow Garage. So I have a screen in front of me. And what can I do with it?
Okay, there's quite a lot of stuff. So I guess the short of it is here, if you click and drag like here,
okay.
You'll notice that you can basically rotate the view.
It's a 3D view of the environment.
Yes.
Okay.
And so...
So I'm looking at the robots and what he sees in the environment, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, click and drag downward.
All right.
There we go. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And now what you can do is if you hit like this button that says grasp.
Okay. Grasp. Oops. Shoot.
So hit cancel.
I pressed the wrong button.
So hit the button that says grasp.
Grasp.
Okay, and now if you...
Can I film you guys while you're explaining? Thanks.
So now if you... what do we got? Oh, it's a little out of date. So let's right-click here on the cloud.
Okay.
Right-click there.
Right-click.
Yeah. And then say refresh.
Refresh.
And now what this is doing is it's getting a new snapshot of what it sees in front of it. So now it's up to date with the objects that are actually there.
I see. So it's updated what it sees in the environment.
Yes. And now, so let's try grabbing this bottle of bouillon.
Mm-hmm.
So if you right-click there and say broadcast quick position,
okay.
It will attempt to align the gripper with the object. And so this is just a virtual positioning of the gripper.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so that's probably a pretty good grasp.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you right-click on it and say accept.
So it's going to go grasp.
The robot will go and execute that grasp autonomously. So it moves there while planning to avoid other objects.
Mm-hmm.
And then it moves in.
Okay. Yeah, that's a bit of an awkward bend because it has to go around without hitting the bottle that's right next to the bouillon.
Right.
All right.
So oftentimes, due to other objects in the environment, it can be difficult for a human to do the fine maneuvering to get there. But it's easy for us to look at a scene and tell where we should grasp, but not necessarily to do the motion to get there.
Okay, excellent. Now I grasped it, so it did the job very well.
Yes. And so, you know, we have other tools to allow you to move it directly under mm-hmm. your control or to place it back down somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that kind of thing.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Okay, and here we're in front of another PR2 robot that's basically waiting for interaction. So what do people do with this robot?
So this robot is doing a program that goes through various sorts of, I guess, what we call props, right? So it's waiting to give you a high five or a low five or a fist bump. And it uses the accelerometer and other sensors on the arm to be able to tell when someone has touched the arm. So in this case, it's waiting for a low five. So if I come over and touch the gripper, then the arm moves back, and now it's going to go through the next motion, which is a high five.
All right,
and I can interrupt it at any time, and it can sense that contact and then go on to the next thing.
Okay, so the goal is to show that this is really safe and that people can interact it within a physical manner.
Right. We have interaction directly with it, and it can respond to the touches that we give it.
Okay, thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Hi, Helen. We're still at the Willow Garage stand, and we're right next to the Turtle Bot, which I think you helped develop. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Helen, and this summer I was an intern at Willow Garage, and I worked on putting an arm on the TurtleBot. So the TurtleBot, if you know, is a basic hobbyist-level, education-level research platform that uses ROS. And what I've done this summer is build, document, and write software for an arm that a hobbyist or someone teaching a classroom could buy for about $400, put on their TurtleBot, and have basic driving or basic manipulation capabilities.
Can you tell us what it looks like?
So it's basically an arm made with Dynamixel servos, 4 degrees of freedom, and standard off-the-shelf components. So it's mostly made out of bialoid brackets, and it's also got a custom gripper and a custom base.
Is that a 3D printed gripper?
So the gripper and the base are both 3D printed.
Okay.
We're looking into other ways of making the parts that are a little easier to do yourself. Okay. But
and the arm is mounted. It's basically you have a plate with the arm, and then below you have the Kinect, which provides all the sensing. And then you have another board, the laptop, so you can run all your algorithms. And at the bottom, an iCreate.
Yes.
Right. Okay, excellent. Do you think there'll be additional stacks?
I think that's additional stacks are really easy for a person to add themselves. With the TurtleBot, we're trying to encourage people to come up with their own modifications and change the TurtleBot as they see fit for their needs. The way the arm is mounted right now, it's basically set up to move stuff around coffee table height. But, you know, you might want to pick stuff up off higher tables, or you might want to, you know, pick stuff up off the floor, so moving the arm to somewhere different on the TurtleBot would be the solution there. And we've made it very easy for you to change that.
Okay. Thanks, Helen.
Thank you.
Now we're here with Pascal from Skybotics. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
I'm from ETH. I made a master's on robotics, and now I'm here with Skybotics showing our two products. One of our products is the small coax. It's on the market for a year, and it's mainly used for educational purposes. It's all open source, so you can implement on it whatever you like. And there's with some fancy sensors, like a real optical mouse sensor. With changed optics, you can do quite nice position controlled. We don't have to do anything with the optical flow because it's already on the mouse sensor, so that's the cool thing about it.
Can you tell us what it looks like? How big is it and all that?
It's only about 9 inches high, so maybe like 25 centimeters high. And it's really lightweight, so it's only 300 grams, can carry an additional payload of 80 grams, and with its battery it has a flight time of about 20 minutes.
And the bigger one that we see here?
The bigger one, that's a new product. We thought we have to go bigger.
To carry things.
Yes, sure. It has a payload capacity of 500 grams, and it can also fly outside with GPS. But because that's quite boring sometimes, we also put a laser on it. So with this laser ranger, you're able to fly close to buildings, find openings, and also fly inside.
Mm-hmm. does. Why did you need 6 propellers?
It's mainly for reliability. So the more propellers you have, the more propellers you can have failed without crashing. So we also have a 8 rotor configuration. There you can have up to 2 rotors failing. So if you fly into a tree, that's a nice safety precaution.
And it's protected by a ring, so that if
yes,
it hits something,
have,
there's no problem.
Yes, you have outer rod to protect the propellers. Yeah.
Thank you, Pascal.
Thank you.
I'm here with Ulrich, and we're looking at the Carobot booth. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yes, my name is Ulrich from Fraunhofer IPA in Stuttgart. And we have developed a Carobot 3 platform, which we provide as a research platform to other universities. And here at IRAS, we show 4 different demonstrations from 4 different teams from different research partners. Let me say something about the robot. The robot was specially designed for human-robot interaction. So we have a 2-sides concept. The front side is for the user interaction, where we can make user input via the touchscreen and tray. And the backhand side is the manipulation side with the arm, where the robot interacts with the environment.
Can you tell us what it looks like?
Yeah, it looks like a butler, because we thought when we designed the robot, what should it do? And we thought it should be able to bring you any items you wish, bring you drinks from the fridge. And we said, okay, that's a task of a butler, and it should also look like a butler, not like a human, because then you would expect maybe it to do things it's not able to do.
And what can it demonstrate at this booth?
Yeah, we have, so one demo is, for example, you can order a drink, and then it will go to a cupboard, open the door, this door opening is quite tricky, because it requires the coordination of the arm and platform movements. So we show that, and when the door is open, there's many different objects, and we have an object detection algorithm which localizes different objects, and then we can grasp it autonomously, put it in a tray, and then bring it back to the user. And there's one other demonstration was with speech interaction with the robot. So you could say, Carobot, go into the kitchen and bring the Pringles to my friend Oliver, for example.
Carobot makes me think more of healthcare. Is it intended for that in the long run?
Yeah, it was originally. So it's the third version, actually. The first and second version were thought to support elder people in elderly care facilities. So one had a function as walking aid, for example. For Carobot 3, we're not only restricted to the care, but also we thought of lifestyle. Maybe we can have it for presentations in hotels, museums, or something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Lorenzo here is presenting the iCup. Can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yes, so we are showing the ICA, which is a platform that we have realized at the Italian Institute of Technology in Genova, Italy. And so the ICA is a 53 degrees of freedom robot. It is an open source platform. And here we are showing the latest advancement of the robot, in particular the skin of the robot. We have covered the large parts of the robot with skin, particularly the arms and the torso.
With tactile
sensors, exactly. So we are showing here a behavior that takes the information from the skin and from the 4 sensors to produce a compliant behavior of the robot. And this is the first demonstration. Then we have also another demonstration showing more cognitive abilities, verbal interaction with the robot from a human, and the possibility to teach the robot new objects and new words. So you can go to the robot and say, this is a red car, and this is a cup, and then the robot learns how to recognize the cup and the red car and associating the names to the objects.
Can you tell us what the robot looks like for someone who can't see it?
Okay. So the robot looks like a small child, a human child.
It has all the features of a small humanoid. It looks very, very interactive. And the hands are very realistic.
On the hands is where we put more effort in the design. Mm-hmm. So they have 5 fingers and 9 motors. So we can control not all joints individually. There are more joints than motors, but we can control with some accuracy the degrees of freedom. So in particular, we have 2 motors for the index, 2 motors for the middle finger, 3 for the thumb, and the others for the remaining degrees of freedom.
And the face looks very beautiful. It looks like it was made from a designer, probably for human-robot interactions. You have these lights which can
include
the eyebrows and the mouth.
Yes. One of the ideas was to make a robot that looks nice without so sort of compromise between being a real prototype and a real human that sometimes becomes scary. So I think we got a nice compromise. I mean, the robot looks like a cartoon, which is nice.
Thank you, Lorenzo.
That's it for today. I hope you enjoyed our audio tour of IROS and will be joining us again in 2 weeks. Until then, you can find more information about the IROS conference and other robot news on our website at www.robotspodcast.com. But for now, goodbye. Visit IROS with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.